Chapter 8. Land Use Planning and Control. Real Estate Planning. While the Constitution guarantees the right of individual ownership of real estate, it does not guarantee the uncontrolled sale, use, and development of real estate. As American history demonstrates, unregulated use of real estate has significant potential for eventual damage to property values, as well as to the environment. Moreover, with the explosive urban growth in this century, it has become clear that regulation of land use is necessary to preserve the interests, safety, and welfare of the community. Without a central authority to exert control, land use tends to be chaotic. For example, rapid growth can outpace the support capabilities of basic municipal services such as sewers, power, water, schools, roads, and communications. On an aesthetic level, communities need controls to keep certain commercial and industrial land uses away from residential areas to avoid the undermining of property values by pollution, noise, and traffic congestion. Goals of land use control. Over time, public and private control of land use has come to focus on certain core purposes. These are preservation of property values, promotion of the highest and best use of property, balance between individual property rights and the public good. Examples include its health, safety, and welfare. Control of growth to remain within infrastructure capabilities. And incorporation of community consensus into regulatory and planning activities. The optimal management of real property usage must take into account both the interests of the individual and the interests of the surrounding community. While maintaining the value of an individual estate is important, the owner of an estate must realize that unregulated use and development can jeopardize the value not only of the owner's estate, but of the neighboring properties. Similarly, the community must keep in mind the effect of government actions on individual property values, since local government is largely supported by taxes based on the value of property. A community achieves its land usage goals through a three-phase process: development of a master plan for the jurisdiction, administration of the plan by a municipal, county, or regional planning commission, and implementation of the plan through a public control of zoning, building codes, permits, and other measures. To review, the three phases of the process are development of a master plan, administration of the plan, and implementation of the plan. Municipal, county, and regional authorities develop comprehensive land use plans for a particular community with the input of property owners. A planning commission manages the master plan and enforces it by exercising its power to establish zones, control building permits, and create building codes. A planning commission manages the master plan and enforces it by exercising its power to establish zones, control building permits, and create building codes. In addition to public land use planning and control, some private entities, such as subdivision associations, can impose additional standards of land use on owners within the private entity's legal jurisdiction. Private controls are primarily implemented by deed restrictions. The Master Plan. Public land use planning incorporates long-term usage strategies and growth policies in a land use plan or master plan. In many states, the process of land use planning begins when the state legislature enacts laws requiring all counties and municipalities to adopt a land use plan. The land use plan must not only reflect the needs of the local area, but also conform to state and federal environmental laws and the plans of regional and state planning agencies. The state enforces its planning mandates by giving state agencies the power to approve county and local plans. Planning objectives. The primary objectives of a master plan are generally to control and accommodate social and economic growth. Amount of growth. A master plan sets specific guidelines on how much growth the jurisdiction will allow. While all communities desire a certain degree of growth, too much growth can overwhelm services and infrastructure. To formulate a growth strategy, a plan initially forecasts growth trends, then estimates how well the municipality can keep pace with the growth forecast. The outcome is a policy position that limits building permits and development projects to desired growth parameters. A growth plan considers nature, location, and extent of permitted uses, availability of sanitation facilities, adequacy of drainage, waste collection, and potable water systems, adequacy of utilities companies, adequacy and patterns of thoroughfares, housing availability, conservation of natural resources, adequacy of recreational facilities, and ability and willingness of the community to absorb new taxes, bond issues, and assessments. Accommodating demand. As the master plan sets forth guidelines for how much growth will be allowed, it must also make plans for accommodating, expanding, or contracting demand for services and infrastructure. The plan must identify facilities requirements for local government, new construction requirements for streets, schools, and social services facilities such as libraries, civic centers, etc., and new construction required to provide power, water, and sewer services. Planning management. Public land use management takes place within county and municipal planning departments. These departments are responsible for long-term implementation of the master plan, creating rules and restrictions that support plans and policies, and enforcing and administering land use regulation on an everyday basis. The Planning Commission. In most jurisdictions, a planning commission or board comprised of officials appointed by the government's legislative entity handles the planning function. The commission oversees the operations of the department's professional planning staff and support personnel. In addition, the commission makes recommendations to elected officials concerning land use policy and policy administration. The Planning Commission is responsible for approving site plans and subdivision plans, approving building permits, and ruling on zoning issues. Public land use control. At the state level, the legislature enacts laws that control and restrict land use, particularly from the environmental perspective. At the local level, county and city governments control land use through the authority known as police power. The most common expressions of police power are county and municipal zoning. Other examples of public land use control are subdivision regulations, building codes, eminent domain, environmental restrictions, and development requirements. Governments also have the right to own real property for public use and welfare. In exercising its ownership rights, a municipality may annex property adjacent to its existing property or purchase other tracts of land through conventional transfers. Where necessary, it may force property owners to sell their property through the power of eminent domain. Zoning. Zoning is the primary tool by which cities and counties regulate land use and implement their respective master plans. The Constitution grants the states the legal authority to regulate, and the states delegate the authority to counties and municipalities through legislation called Enabling Acts. The Zoning Ordinance. The vehicle for zoning a city or county is the zoning ordinance, a regulation enacted by the local government. The intent of zoning ordinances is to specify land usage for every parcel within the jurisdiction. In some areas, state laws permit zoning ordinances to apply to areas immediately beyond the legal boundaries of the city or county. Zoning ordinances implement the master plan by regulating density, land use intensity, aesthetics, and highest and best use. Ordinances typically address the nature of land use, office, commercial, residential, etc., Size and configuration of a building site, including setbacks, sidewalk requirements, parking requirements, and access. Site development procedures. Construction and design methods and materials, including height restrictions, building site-to-site area ratios, and architectural styles. Use of space within the building, and signage. Building permits. Local governments enforce zoning ordinances by issuing building permits to those who want to improve, repair, or refurbish a property. To receive a permit, the project must comply with all relevant ordinances and codes. Further zoning enforcement is achieved through periodic inspections. Types of zones. One of the primary applications of zoning power is the separation of residential properties from commercial and industrial uses. Proper design of land use in this manner preserves the aesthetics and value of neighborhoods, and promotes the success of commercial enterprises through intelligently located zones. Six common types of zone are residential, commercial, industrial, agricultural, public, and planned unit development, or PUD. Residential. Residential zoning restricts land use to private, non-commercial dwellings. Subzones in this category further stipulate the types of residences allowed, whether single-family, multi-unit complexes, condominiums, publicly subsidized housing, or other form of housing. Residential zoning regulates density by limiting the number and size of dwelling units and lots in area, and values and aesthetics by limiting the type of residences allowed. Some areas adopt buffer zones to separate residential areas from commercial and industrial zones. Commercial. Commercial zoning regulates the location of office and retail land usage. Some commercial zones allow combinations of office and retail land uses on a single site. Subzones in this category may limit the type of retail or office activity permitted, for example, a department store versus a strip center. Commercial zoning regulates intensity of usage by limiting the area of store or office per site area. Intensity regulation is further achieved by minimum parking requirements, setbacks, and building height restrictions. Industrial. Industrial zoning regulates intensity of usage, type of industrial activity, and environmental consequences. A municipality may not allow some industrial zones, such as heavy industrial, at all. The industrial park is a relatively recent concept in industrial zoning. Agricultural. Agricultural zoning restricts land use to farming, ranching, and other agricultural enterprises. Public. Public zoning restricts land use to public services and recreation, parks, post offices, government buildings, schools, and libraries are examples of uses allowed in a public zone. Planned unit development, or PUD. Planned unit development zoning restricts use to development of whole tracts that are designed to use space efficiently and maximize open space. A PUD zone may be for residential, commercial, or industrial uses, or combinations thereof. Zoning administration. Zoning Board of Adjustment. A county or local board, usually called the Zoning Board of Adjustment or Zoning Appeals Board, administers zoning ordinances. The board rules on interpretations of zoning ordinances as they apply to specific land use cases presented by property owners in the jurisdiction. In effect, the zoning board is a court of appeals for owners and developers who desire to use land in a manner that is not entirely consistent with existing ordinances. The board conducts hearings of specific cases and renders official decisions regarding the land use based on evidence presented. A zoning board generally deals with such issues and appeals as non-conforming use, variance, special exception or conditional use permit, and zoning amendment. If the board rejects an appeal, the party may appeal to the ruling further in a court of law. Nonconforming use. A nonconforming use is one that clearly differs from current zoning. Usually, nonconforming uses result when a zoning change leaves existing properties in violation of the new ordinance. This type of nonconforming use is a legal nonconforming use. A board usually treats this kind of situation by allowing it to continue either indefinitely, until the structures are torn down, only while the same use continues, or until the property is sold. For instance, a motel is situated in a residential area that no longer allows commercial activity. The zoning board rules that the motel may continue to operate until it is sold, destroyed, or used for any other commercial purpose. An illegal non-conforming use is one that conflicts with ordinances that were in place before the use commenced. For instance, if the motel in the previous example is sold and the new owner continues to operate the property as a motel, the motel is now an illegal non-conforming use. Variance. A zoning variance allows a use that differs from the applicable ordinance for a variety of justifiable reasons, including that compliance will cause unreasonable hardship, the use will not change the essential character of the area, and the use does not conflict with the general intent of the ordinance. For example, an owner mistakenly violates a setback requirement by 2 feet. His house is already constructed, and complying with the full setback now would be extremely expensive, if not impossible. The zoning board grants a variance on the grounds that compliance would cause an unreasonable hardship. A grant of zoning variance may be unconditional, or it may require conditions to be fulfilled, such as removing the violation after a certain time. Special exception. A special exception grant authorizes a use that is not consistent with the zoning ordinance in a literal sense, yet is clearly beneficial or essential to the public welfare and does not materially impair other uses in the zone. A special exception grant authorizes a use that is not consistent with the zoning ordinance in a literal sense, yet is clearly beneficial or essential to the public welfare and does not materially impair other uses in the zone. A possible example is an old house in a residential zone adjacent to a retail zone. The zoning board might grant a special exception to the local group that proposes to renovate the house and convert it to a local museum, which is a retail use since the community stands to benefit from a museum. Amendment. A current or potential property owner may petition the zoning board for an outright change in the zoning of a particular property. For example, a property zone for agricultural use has been idle for years. A major employer desires to develop the property for a local distribution facility, which would create numerous jobs, and petitions for an amendment. The board changes the zoning from agricultural to light industrial to permit the development. Since a change in zoning can have significant economic and social impact, an appeal for an amendment is a difficult process that often involves public hearings. Subdivision regulation. In addition to complying with zoning ordinances, a developer of multiple properties in a subdivision must meet requirements for subdivisions. Subdivision plat approval. The developer submits a plat of subdivision containing surveyed plat maps and comprehensive building specifications. The plat, as a minimum, shows that the plan complies with local zoning and building ordinances. The project can commence only after the relevant authority has approved the plat. Subdivision requirements typically regulate location, grading, alignment, surfacing, street width, and highways, sewers and water mains, lot and block dimensions, building and setback lines, public use dedications, utility easements, ground percolation, environmental impact report, and zoned density. FHA requirements. In addition to local regulation, subdivisions must meet Federal Housing Authority requirements to qualify for FHA financing insurance. The FHA sets standards similar to local ordinances to ensure an adequate level of construction quality, aesthetics, and infrastructure services. Building codes. Building codes allow the county and municipality to protect the public against the hazards of unregulated construction. Building codes establish standards for virtually every aspect of construction projects, including off-site improvements such as streets, curbs, gutters, drainage systems, and on-site improvements such as the building itself. Building codes typically address architectural and engineering standards, construction material standards, building support systems such as life, safety, electrical, mechanical, and utility systems. Certificate of Occupancy. Building inspectors inspect a new development or improvement for code compliance. If the work complies, the municipality or county issues a certificate of occupancy, which officially clears the property for occupation and use. Public acquisition and ownership. If efforts to regulate privately owned property are inadequate or impractical in a particular situation, or if there is a compelling public need, a county or local government may acquire property by means of direct purchase. A governing body might acquire the land because of the public need for thoroughfares and public rights of way, recreational facilities, schools, essential public facilities, and urban renewal or redevelopment. In many cases, public acquisition of property is a voluntary transaction between the government entity and the private owner. However, if the private party is unwilling to sell, the government may purchase the property anyway. The power to do so is called eminent domain. Eminent domain. Eminent domain allows a government entity to purchase a fee, leasehold, or easement interest in privately owned real property for the public good and for public use, regardless of the owner's desire to sell or otherwise transfer any interest. In exchange for the interest, the government must pay the owner just compensation. To acquire a property, the public entity initiates a condemnation suit. Transfer of title extinguishes all existing leases, liens, and other encumbrances on the property. Tenants affected by the condemnation sale may or may not receive compensation, depending on the terms of their agreement with the landlord. Public entities that have the power of eminent domain include all levels of government, public districts, schools, etc., public utilities, public service corporations, power companies, etc., public housing and redevelopment agencies, and other government agencies. To acquire a property, the public entity must first adopt a formal resolution to acquire the property, variously called a resolution of necessity. The resolution must be adopted at a formal hearing where the owner may voice an opinion. Once adopted, the government agency may commence a condemnation suit in court. Subsequently, the property is purchased and the title is transferred in exchange for just compensation. Transfer of title extinguishes all existing leases, liens, and other encumbrances on the property. Tenants affected by the condemnation sale may or may not receive compensation, depending on the terms of their agreement with the landlord. In order to proceed with condemnation, the government agency must demonstrate that the project is necessary, the property is necessary for the project, and that the location offers the greatest public benefit with the least detriment. As an eminent domain proceeding is generally an involuntary acquisition, the condemnation proceeding must accord with due process of law to ensure that it does not violate individual property rights. Further, the public entity must justify its use of eminent domain in court by demonstrating the validity of the intended public use and the resulting public good or public purpose ultimately served. Private land use control. Property owners in the private sector can regulate land use to some extent through deed restrictions and deed conditions. Deed restriction. A restriction expressed in a conveyance, deed or lease, of a residential, commercial, or industrial property places limits on the use of the property. Such restrictions are also referred to as covenants, conditions, and restrictions, or CCRs. A quitclaim deed can terminate a private deed restriction. Typical restrictions concern a required minimum area of residence, a setback, prohibitions against constructions of sheds or secondary buildings, and prohibitions against conducting certain commercial activities. Deed restrictions may not be discriminatory by restricting ownership or use on the basis of race, religion, marital status, or gender. Restrictions on commercial property use may not violate fair trade and antitrust laws. Declaration restriction. The declaration of a subdivision, planned unit development, condominium, and commercial or industrial park contains private use restrictions. These have the same legal effect as a deed restriction, as the declaration attaches to the rights in the property. A private party cannot, however, extinguish a declaration restriction by agreeing or quitclaim deed. The kinds of restrictions found in declarations are much the same as those found in deeds: construction restraints, aesthetic standards, etc. The underlying purpose of restrictions is to preserve the value and quality of the neighborhood, commercial center, or industrial park. Injunction. A private usage restriction can be enforced by filing for a court injunction. A court can order the violator to cease and desist, or to correct the infraction. If, however, owners in a subdivision or park allow a violation to continue for a sufficient length of time, they can lose their right to legal recourse. Deed condition. A deed condition may restrict certain uses of a property, much like a deed restriction. However, violation of a deed condition gives the grantor the right to retake possession of the property and file suit for legal title. Environmental controls. In recent years, federal and state legislatures have enacted laws to conserve and protect the environment against hazards of growth and development, particularly in terms of air, water, and soil quality. Regional, county, and local planners must integrate environmental laws into their respective land use plans and regulations. Private property owners are responsible for complying with these laws. Areas of concern. Air. Air quality, both indoor and outdoor, has been a matter of concern since the 1960s. With today's construction methods creating airtight, energy-efficient structures, attention to sources of indoor air pollution is more important than ever. Off-gassing from synthetic materials and lack of ventilation can lead to such consequences as sick building syndrome and building-related illness, as well as other health problems. Among the significant threats are asbestos, a powdery mineral once commonly used as fireproof insulating material around pipes, in floor tiles and linoleum, in siding and roofing, in wallboard, joint compound, and many other applications. Carbon monoxide, a colorless, odorless, poisonous gas that may result from faulty heating equipment. Home and commercial detection devices are available. Formaldehyde, a chemical used in building materials and in other items such as fabrics and carpeting. As it ages, formaldehyde gives off a colorless, pungent gas. Lead, a heavy metal once widely used in paints and plumbing materials. It has been banned in paint since 1978 and in new plumbing since 1988. Mold, a fungus that grows in the presence of moisture and oxygen on virtually any kind of organic surface. Radon, a colorless, odorless radioactive gas that occurs naturally in the soil throughout the United States. Soil and water. Soil, groundwater, and drinking water supplies are vulnerable to pollution from leaking landfills, improper waste disposal, agricultural runoff, industrial pumping in waterways, highway and rail spills, industrial emissions, internal combustion emissions, and underground tanks leaking fuels and chemicals, to mention but a few sources. Some of the problems subject to controls are dioxins, a family of compounds produced as a byproduct of manufacturing and incinerating materials that contain chlorine, lead and mercury, MTBE, methyl tertiary butyl ether, a gasoline additive, PCB, polychlorinated biphenyl, a substance formerly widely used as an electrical insulation. Underground storage tanks, or USTs, regulated since 1984, and wetlands, considered part of the natural water filtering system as well as special habitats, subject to restrictions on development and use. Other ambient and natural conditions. Other regulated and controlled environmental conditions include electromagnetic fields created by power lines, noise created by airports, air, rail, and highway traffic, earthquake and flood hazards that affect hazard insurance, lending practices, and construction requirements for buildings in designated flood and earthquake zones. Major legislation. National Environmental Policy Act of 1969. This act created the Environmental Protection Agency and the Council for Environmental Quality, giving them a mandate to establish environmental standards for land use planning. The act also required environmental impact surveys on large development projects. Clean Air Amendment of 1970. This act authorized the EPA to establish air quality standards for industrial land uses, as well as for automobile and airplane emissions. Water Quality Improvement Act of 1970, the Water Pollution Control Act Amendment of 1972, and the Clean Water Act Amendment of 1977. These acts addressed standards to control water pollution and industrial wastes from the standpoints of future prevention, as well as remediation of existing pollution. Resource Recovery Act of 1970, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act of 1976, the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation and Liability Act Superfund of 1980, the Superfund Amendment and Reauthorization Act of 1986. These acts addressed disposal of solid and toxic wastes and measures for managing waste. In addition, the Superfund Act provided money for hazardous waste disposal and the authority to charge cleanup costs to responsible parties. Lead-based paint ban of 1978 and Residential Lead-based Paint Hazard Reduction Act of 92 and 96. These regulations banned lead in the manufacture of paint and established disclosure requirements and guidelines for testing and remediation. Responsibilities and liabilities. Licensees are expected to be aware of environmental issues and to know where to look for professional help. They are not expected to have expert knowledge of environmental law, nor of physical conditions in a property. Rather, they must treat potential environmental hazards in the same way that they treat other material facts about a property, disclosure. In sum, for their own protection, licensees should be careful to be aware of potential hazards, disclose known material facts, distribute the HUD booklet, and know where to seek professional help. Lead. The Lead-Based Paint Act of 1992 requires a seller or seller's agent to disclose known lead problems in properties built before 1978. The licensee must give the buyer or lessee copy of the EPA HUD U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission booklet, Protect Your Family from Lead in Your Home. Further, the 1996 lead-based paint regulation requires sellers or lessors of almost all residential properties built before 1978 to disclose known lead-based paint hazards and provide any relevant records available. The seller is not required to test for lead, but must allow the buyer a 10-day period for lead inspection. Only a licensed lead professional is permitted to deal with testing, removal, or encapsulation. It is the real estate practitioner's responsibility to ensure compliance. CERCLA Superfund. Under CERCLA and the Superfund Amendment of 1986, current landowners as well as previous owners of a property may be held liable for environmental violations, even if innocent of a violation. Sellers often carry the greatest exposure, and real estate licensees may be held liable for improper disclosure. A real property owner can be held liable for the entire cost of remediating soil, groundwater, or indoor air contamination. A tenant can be held liable for cleanup costs as an operator if tenant operations are linked to contamination. Sale of a contaminated property. Selling a property with an environmental problem does not avoid liability for the seller, although seller and buyer may agree to share or transfer some liability. If there is a concern, a Phase 1 audit or environmental site assessment, ESA, should be conducted before proceeding with the transaction. A Phase 1 audit identifies prior uses and presence of hazardous materials. The Phase 1 ESA reviews environmental documents, conducts a title for environmental liens and restrictions, and includes a visual inspection of the site and surrounding properties. There is no sampling or testing. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and HUD require special Phase 1 ESAs on certain properties. A Phase 2 audit ESA is conducted if a site is considered contaminated. This is a more detailed investigation using chemical analysis. This is a more detailed investigation using chemical analysis to uncover hazardous substances and/or petroleum hydrocarbons in samples of soil, groundwater, or building materials. A Phase 2 audit involves remediation. Intensive testing, sampling, monitoring, and remodeling are applied to design plans for remediation, cleanup, and follow-up monitoring. Remediation may use a variety of techniques and technologies, such as excavation and removal, dredging, chemical treatment, pumping, and solidification. Major remediation efforts usually require extensive consultation with the surrounding community. Federal funding may be available. Chapter 8 Snapshot Review. Real Estate Planning. Goals of Land Use Control. Preserve property values, promote highest and best use, safeguard public health, safety, and welfare, control growth, and incorporate community consensus. The process involves developing a plan, creating administration, and authorizing controls. The Master Plan. Long-term growth and usage strategies often required by state law. Local plans fuse municipal goals and needs with state and regional laws. Planning objectives. Control growth rates, how much growth will occur and at what rate. Control growth patterns, type of growth desired, where it should be located. Accommodate demand for services and infrastructure. Plan development. Research trends and conditions, blend local and state objectives into master plan. Planning management. Commission makes rules, approves permits, codes, and development plans. Public land use control. State laws, local regulations, zones, codes. Public ownership, private restrictions. Zoning. Police power granted by state-level enabling acts, zoning ordinance, creates zones, usage restrictions, regulations, and requirements. Types of zone. Residential, commercial, industrial, agricultural, public, PUD. Zoning Administration. Zoning Board of Adjustment oversees rule administration and appeals. Nonconforming use. Legal if use prior to zone creation. Variance, exception based on hardship. Special exception based on public interest. Amendment, change of zones, rezoning. Subdivision regulation. Plat of subdivision and relevant requirements must be met and approved. Must meet FHA requirements for insured financing. Building codes. Comprehensive on-site and off-site construction and material standards must be met to receive certificate of occupancy. Public acquisition and ownership. Eminent domain, public power to acquire property for public use. Private land use control. Deed restriction. Single property use restriction, as stipulated in a deed, may not be discriminatory. Declaration restriction. Use restriction in multiple property declarations, enforced by court injunction. Deed condition. Usage restriction that can trigger repossession by a previous owner if violated. Environmental controls. Areas of concern. Air, soil, water quality, ambient health hazards, natural hazards. Major legislation. Limits damage to environment. Standards for air, land, water, and materials use. Responsibilities and liabilities. Disclosure and information for practitioners, remediation for owners, lead disclosure, CERCLA Superfund exposure, phases 1, 2, and 3, environmental site assessments to detect and mitigate contamination.